You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From equestrian businesswomen, and you're listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we speak with Roseanne Spallone-Nagel, a lifelong equestrian and holistic financial strategist who works with business owners, high-achieving women, and the multi-generational families to help them grow, protect, and transfer wealth in a way that aligns with their values.
Roseanne Spallone-Nagel is a lifelong horsewoman and in the top 1% globally of financial professionals as a member of MDRT, Million Dollar Roundtable, who blends strategic planning with real-life perspective. She helps entrepreneurs, equestrians, and multi-generational families structure their wealth with purpose so they can protect what matters, grow what they've built, and leave a legacy that lasts. With a background that spans elite-level equestrian sport and holistic financial planning, Roseanne offers a rare values-driven approach to wealth.
Her clients trust her not only with their assets, but with their goals, fears, and vision for the future. She continues to teach hunter, jumper, and equitation clinics throughout the year and lives in Ridgefield, Connecticut with her family and their Bernedoodles, including a new litter of puppies that just arrived. The trust and discipline she brings to the ring reflect her approach to financial planning, focused on long-term vision, meaningful relationships, and lasting legacy. Whether you're building your first safety net or stewarding generational wealth, Roseanne offers complimentary, no-pressure sessions to help you take the first step with confidence. Equestrian Businesswomen is excited to host the second annual EQBW Meetup with a party and a supporting women in business vendor market at the 2025 Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular Horse Show at White Hollow Farm in Stillwater, New York. The Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular is the first ever horse show created by women, operated by women, benefiting women's health, and showcasing businesswomen throughout the equestrian industry and beyond.
Local and equestrian women-owned businesses are welcome to participate in a vendor market, and everyone is invited to attend the meetup and party free of charge. Don't miss the opportunity to engage in a fun afternoon, support women in business, and watch fantastic competition at the Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular Show. For more information, visit www.saratogahorseshows.com. Hi, we are really excited to have our friend Roseanne Nagel joining us today to talk about lots of fun things, financial things. And Roseanne has been one of my best friends for more than 20 years. We groomed together for Ann Krasinski and have stayed friends ever since. And Roseanne has, you know, been one of those people that I have always admired for following her passion. And we're going to talk to her about how she had to kind of pivot and find something else. So it's going to be fun to talk to you, Roseanne, and share your story.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah. So kind of talking about that background in the equine industry, I mean, I just said, you know, we groomed together, but can you give a little bit more about, you know, how you got started and kind of where you were in it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I spent like over, I was laughing because you're like, we've been friends for 20 something years. I'm like, yeah, we're getting older. It's crazy to say that, right? Yeah. But I spent like over 3 decades in the equestrian world. It was definitely the foundation of my professional life now. Like you mentioned, we worked together under Ann Krasinski. So groomed for her, went on to be a rider, and eventually followed a role as assistant trainer with Frank Madden. you know, I always felt like when we had that early exposure to that Olympic caliber training, you had like high pressure programs and just kind of formed a deep appreciation for, honestly, like having excellence around us all the time. It was in the ring or out of the ring. I thought it was a really amazing space to have a background in when it comes to being in the equine industry. From there, I went on to launch my own business, Spallone Sport Horses. It was really kind of like a boutique hunter jumper facility. We did not just training riders, but it was also kind of like a pipeline for sourcing development, whether it was, you know, importing horses or bringing up talent from like a school program into the show ring. The horses weren't all investment horses. Some were rescue. We really had a lot of different spaces that we worked in. I think all of them were really just about connecting riders with the horses that matched them, whether it was, you know, developing young horses to be marketed and sold, or, you know, developing riders and their team to go to compete successfully at Devon and WEF and WEC and all the different, you know, amazing venues that we're lucky enough to be at. I mean, that's really kind of my background in the equine industry.
Yeah. And obviously, like, it was your whole life. I mean, everything revolved around horses, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, from the time we woke up until the time we went to bed, we were always on the road for 100% of the time. We had a few different spaces here. Like I said, when I had Spallone Sport Horses, I based out of a few different barns, and we, you know, I taught clinics nationally and a couple internationally, which was a real treat. So that was, you know, I just loved it. I mean, I loved being in the barn, seeing all the people, watching the horses develop, bringing along a young one. I thought that was really amazing.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of led you out of the horse industry? Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, that was, you know, the transition from the barn into the financial world was definitely like the hardest part of my life personally. It was really an identity shift. My son was, I came home from doing a clinic and I gave him a hug and he was about two and he stopped breathing. So immediately I knew that I needed to pivot. It was very petrifying for me to kind of think like I've done this my whole life since I was 4 years old. You know, I've missed funerals and weddings and family events in order to go and be successful in that career. And then all of a sudden I knew that I needed to make a complete shift. So I was really lucky enough to have a few of my very, very good clients that I had brought up their children since they were three, and then they were like going off to college, right? That they worked in the financial field and they just said, Roseanne, you know, you definitely have the right headspace for it. You've got the drive. You know, you can talk to people about these things. You've worked with me in my investments on my investment horses. I think that the financial world would be a good space for you to start. So I had some really good close friends and clients that were able to help me find a different space that I would be successful in.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't imagine how scary it was both to have, you know, your son be so highly allergic and have to deal with that and then have to completely change and do it quickly, right?
Yeah. So the hardest part, hands down, was definitely the identity shift. You know, like horses, you know, they weren't just my job. It was my life, my community. It's, as we all know, you talk about like horse language, right? You're having conversation with a horse person. It's only that person that you can talk to. So it was like what I knew how to speak. I had built that career, obviously, years and years, built a reputation, which takes a lot in this industry. You know, it's not just anybody when you're like, oh, I'm going to this person. It's really hard to build a good reputation where, you know, you have trust and people would always say like, oh, you're always so nice everywhere we go. And I had trainers come up to me saying like, I was always so approachable and open. And in the equestrian world, that is definitely something that you come across. People are, I think, scared to lose their business. So they shut down a little bit. And being confident in the business that you've built helps one to be open, I feel. So having that identity kind of taken away from me because I really built it over my business, not just my personal life. It was my personal life. Having that be so suddenly taken away where I knew that if I went to the barn, I came home, my son was going to stop breathing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so hard.
Did it happen more than one time? Or what did you know immediately?
It got worse. So we knew he had an allergy because I came home and he had like been covered in hives. And I just thought it was other allergies. I just really didn't think about it that way. And then once he stopped breathing, I was like, oh, wow, like we need to get him tested. Like, I don't know what this is. We have dogs. We have cats. I'm with the horses. Like, it's springtime. Like, I don't know what's going on. And so when he got his allergy testing, it was Matt. They were like, yeah, no, he can't go anywhere near a horse. Like, this is not even, they were like, we can do shots, but he still shouldn't go anywhere near a horse or be anywhere near anything that has to do with horses. So that was definitely.
Yeah. I mean, such a surprise too, right? Because you were probably around the horses while you were pregnant and everything, right?
Right. I have pictures of him as a newborn on a horse in a saddle. Like I brought him to the barn. It was literally, I mean, and it was just very slow. It was not all of a sudden. It was that as he got a little bit older, he grew into this very strong allergy and it just got worse. So yeah.
Wow. And then you were so super lucky to have people around you that like recognized your ability with the finances. But did you have to have education before you did that?
Yeah. So the education, definitely. There's a lot of education. So I actually had a bout of cancer right after Van became allergic and right before I made the decision, like I need to completely change this. So I was on bed rest. And I had been talking to a few of my clients and they were like, I think this is a good field for you. Start with this, take this exam first, and then go out and look. So it was about 40 hours a week for a few weeks of studying, like full time. And then I took the certain tests. So you have to take like a life and health, securities testing for investments. So it's really holistic planning, which was what I really wanted to go into. I didn't want to just go in and do sales. It's kind of not my vibe. So I really wanted, that was my number one, was trying to find a purpose, right? Like what is the purpose of my life? And my purpose when teaching was bringing kids along and bringing horses along and watching them grow and like overcoming challenges and being part of their life, right? Like that was, that's me. Like I want to build relationships. I'm not like very transactional. If somebody wanted to kind of like come in and do weekly lessons, I'm like, okay, like you can ride with this trainer, right? Like I really like that relationship building. So I knew that I needed to have the whole spectrum of education. So I'm still learning, right? I mean, that's kind of the way the business works is every quarter I'm taking another exam on whatever it is just to specialize in one thing or another. So yeah, there's constant education. Currently, I'm licensed in 11 states. I plan to make it more. Right now, I'm just the East Coast and California.
What about like before you got that education, had you gone to college and had a degree?
Yeah, I went to Fordham for psychology, a minor in psychology, and then I majored in law. But again, I just wanted to build my life around people that were like having goals that were happy. And I felt like that was a very depressive space. A lot of people in that space are not the happiest people to work with every day. And yeah, so I knew that, you know, like whether it was psychology, which actually very much helps in this field and obviously in the horse world, like people's fears of riding and like their insecurities really show up in the saddle. And then the same thing when it comes to financially, you know, a lot of people are maybe embarrassed by wherever they are or they're like overwhelmed by all the things in the organization and kind of trying to put a team together. I mean, it's very much the psychology portion goes into both fields. And then the law portion, I'm not practicing, so I can't give advice, but I know at least the questions to ask so that you can go to your lawyer, which is helpful.
Yeah. It's funny. I went into college as a psych major and then I switched to business. But yeah, and the whole reason why is because I was like a nutcase as a kid riding. I'd shake and cry and throw up before I went in until I did a thing with a sports psychologist. It helped me tremendously. So that's what I thought I was going to do. And then I get that.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. You like learn those things and then they are helpful in life though, for sure.
Oh yeah, totally helpful even in sales, honestly.
Yeah. Definitely.
And so now that you're working in this new position as a financial services professional, what does your job look like and what kind of services do you provide?
So two separate questions, really, right? So like, I think that, you know, what is the job? Like somebody will ask me, like, what do you do? And I just tell them I'm a financial strategist because I do a little bit of everything. Really, it can be taking the overwhelm out. Like I was mentioning before, a lot of people seem overwhelmed. Just managing, whether it's managing significant wealth or it's just starting out, they don't know what they're, where they are. Like, you know, especially in the equestrian field, I know a lot of like grooms and riders and trainers who are business owners who are like, I don't have an IRA. I haven't even thought about that. My world is spinning so fast that I haven't really put the time into sitting down and doing something about it. I don't even know where to start. So a lot of people that I work with are starting from that space and just kind of saying like, okay, let's sit down, whether it's an hour a week or you're a person that wants to sit down for a full day together and we just hang out for the day and we get it all done at once, like whatever works, kind of that's one space. Or I'll talk to a lot of people on the other spectrum in the horse world, whether it's the horse world or outside of the horse world, whether it's business owners or people who are like, this is my hobby and I have a string of horses and their goals are very, very different. They're going to most likely have retirement plans and those things, but they're looking at wealth management. You know, how am I going to transfer my legacy from my generation to my children or my grandchildren? How do I avoid I'm not looking to break the law, but how do I avoid paying taxes that I don't have to pay? Right. So tax diversifying their estates. So it's very different types of people that I talk to in a day, which I love. And, you know, in terms of services, it's everything from like gathering a team of people, getting people connected to lawyers or CPAs if they don't have one, organizing what they're doing, to also on the other side of it, sitting with somebody's team that if they already have their team, having a second set of eyes, be like, okay, are you really confident enough with your plan that you're okay having a second set of eyes come in to see if they see anything? Because sometimes that's really helpful.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you and I have spoken before too, and it makes everything a lot less overwhelming to have somebody like you being like an advocate, and then you know who you have to go to. Because sometimes you don't even know who you have to go to get these kind of things done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it's like a simple, like to me, a simple question where it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to plan a vacation with my husband and I don't know where to pull money from today. Like, it's just one of those days. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, let's give me 15 minutes and let's get on the phone and like tell me where the things are. Or I already know very closely, right? And we'll kind of talk that through. It can be something simple like that too.
Yeah. So what does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, no 2 days look the same. So definitely, you know, that is something that I definitely love. I feel like in the horse world, it, depending on where you are, can get a little repetitive, right? Like you're coming in, you're doing the things. I think the thing in the horse world was for me really fun was you would like have a different investment horse or you'd have a new rider coming in and like watching them change their talent. Like their challenges were different, but like your routine basically is the same every day. That's similar in the financial space. The routine for me is the same every day. I'm very much type A person. Like I like to have things. Like I wake up, I have my coffee, I do my yoga, right? Like I like to have my day run the same. But when it comes to what it looks like and who I'm maybe typically working with, like I just mentioned, it can be somebody who's putting together a debt management plan in 1 hour. And then an hour and a half later, I'm doing like a buy sell agreement for a business to say like, okay, what happens when you want to get out of this business? Where is it going? Do you have a plan for that? Like, what's your exit strategy? And then in the afternoon, I might be talking to somebody who has inherited some wealth and they're looking or they built their own wealth and they're like, what do I do? I don't know where to put it and how's it going to grow? And I don't want to be jumped into the next tax bracket. So what am I going to do with that? And can I open up a trust? And like, they have a lot of trust questions. So it's totally different throughout the day, depending on who I'm talking to.
And it's kind of like a lot of networking that you do, right? Pulling all these different people together.
Yes, a lot of networking. So that is something that I didn't know that I was good at, but people always tell me like, Roseanne, you're like the mayor, you know everybody. I'm like, no, I just like people. Like I enjoy talking to people. So like even I was talking to somebody last night and they're like, yeah, I'd like to do some swim training, like a client. And I was like, oh, great. Oh, that sounds great. You know what? I know some moms. Let me like send your number. And within 24 hours, she's got 15 new clients, right? And she's like, this is amazing. So like definitely networking is a huge part of it just because I think it's fun, right? I think like if somebody's like, oh, I need this and I know somebody that's going to do that, then let's get them together. Yeah. So, you know, networking for social experiments like that. but also collaborating with teams of people. You know, I think that you have to be able to talk to different people. So I'll talk to a lot of people and they'll be like, oh, I have a financial advisor. I'm like, that's great. Awesome. I work with financial advisors all the time. This is what I also do. But I also know that, like, my husband, for example, has had his accounts with his advisor for years. I'm not going to take over his accounts, which is hysterical, right?
Right.
I totally get that. I'm like, great, that sounds perfect. So like, I work as part of his team, right? Or like, this person's like, I already have this person, like, great, let's get together and make sure you have a whole team around you. You know, do you have you're the person who's doing these investments? Do you have the person that's doing your insurances? Do you have your CPA? Do they ever sit down at a table together? Why not? It's everybody should sit down and have the conversation and be on the same plan, right? You know, is your will put together? Is your trust put together? Do you have one? Do you not? Are you scared of putting one together? What is your emotional? What do you feel about that? Why not? It's not a judgment space, but there's a reason. Like, whether you've not had the time or you're scared of decisions you have to make, or is it a financial, like, oh, it's going to cost me $1,500 or $2,000, right? Like, what is the reasoning behind it? Because I would kind of gauge that most people would think that having a will is a good idea, right? I think, like, not very many people have gotten that far. And I think that that's where I'd like to kind of help in that space, is kind of saying, like, well, why? And then let's figure out how to get you where you think that you want to be.
Yeah. When you and I sat down, what I loved is that you're like, okay, who do you have on your team already? So I gave you who I had. And then we kind of went through things that, like, maybe I hadn't thought about and I needed a little bit more to think about or more guidance. And I like that it could be broken apart and it wasn't like you were coming in to just take control over everything. And then the second part of it was, oh, I would love to talk to your people because, you know, like, you surrounded yourself with horse people and I could use that. And so, like, then the networking came in to kind of like, oh, let's try and, you know, maybe they could be helpful to another client or whatever. So I really like how you are able to do that as well in this job.
Yeah. I mean, that is the fun part, right? Like I was saying, and like, I call it a social experiment because it is. It's like, okay, well, who do you know and what can they do? And like, I might have somebody that will ask a question. I'm like, oh, I know somebody. I sat down and talked to them last week. Or maybe I had somebody in the past that's asked me, I'm like, you know what? I don't know anybody yet, but if I ever come across somebody, then I'll be sure to reach out. And I'm type A. So I have a list of, like,
Of course you do.
You know,
I'm not always like, I know somebody, but I can't remember them or what their name was, but I know somebody and it'll come to me eventually. But no, you have a list.
Okay. So last night,
person, who was it that needed this person? And I'll be like, okay, let me call those people and let them know that I finally found the person.
And you don't like sales. What? I mean, like, that's like sales, right? So last night I'm playing golf and I'm at the golf course and there's an apartment complex and some woman was there talking about it. She's like, oh, I wonder what those apartments are like. And I'm like, oh, I had friends that lived there. Let me tell you about it. And it's got this feature and that feature. And I like sold her on moving into this apartment complex that I don't even live in. But my friends were there, had lived there, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like it's the same. You're like, oh, wait a minute. I know. Wait, oh, my God. Let me help you. It is also a little sales. Sorry. Hate to bring it to you.
Mm-hmm. No, it is for sure. I mean, it is a sales industry. People are like, well, how do you get paid? I'm a fiduciary. I can't charge my clients money. So that is one thing that's for sure. A lot of people can. It's not a side of the business that I'm looking to go into. I like where I am and that I can keep a purposeful space. So yeah, when it comes to like, how do I get paid? I get paid off of referrals. I get paid off of networking. Eventually, somebody's going to utilize something that I can give them. And then they will pay, like, whether it's, you know, a company that I'm working with, and then that company will pay me on the back end of it.
That's interesting because actually I've had this conversation with somebody before about like, how do you get paid to network?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, because we do it a lot and this person was very good at connecting people, but it's like, how do you actually get paid to connect people? So it's interesting that that's kind of what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like all networking and referrals. Like, oh my gosh, I talked to Roseanne the other day and you need to sit down with her or blah, 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 blah. Where I know this guy who does like what you were saying. You're like, I have my CPA. I'm like, fantastic. When are we sitting down?
Yeah.
500 clients for him that are waiting.
I think that would overwhelm him, honestly. Yes. I'm waiting for a text back from, I don't know, 3 weeks ago.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I think he turned his brain off after tax season. He's like, just give me a minute.
Yeah, you can't talk to them right after April. Yeah, maybe like come August. They're like, yeah. I'm going to enjoy my summer. And come August, I guess I'll get back on the wagon.
Yeah, exactly.
So fun.
Can you give us kind of an explanation of what a fiduciary is and kind of what the job is, what it means?
Yeah. So basically it is that I need to work for somebody else. Like I am your quarterback, right? So like you're saying with the networking, I am there as a voice for whoever my client is. So my job, like, let's say there's a company that's like, oh, you should buy this. And I'm like, okay, well, thank you for letting me know that exists. And then I talk to clients and say, like, what is your problem? What is your fear? What is keeping you up at night? Okay, here are a few different solutions. I'm never going to be like, here's the one thing that you should look at. Mm-hmm. So I'll show somebody a few different solutions, for example, and then say like, okay, like this seems to fit with you because of this reason. This fits because of this reason. What feels the best to you? So as a fiduciary, I'm not there to sell you something. I am there to figure out what is it that you need, what's suitable. And some people, this is where the psychology comes in, right, Jen, is like, some people will come in and say like, oh, I want to invest everything very aggressively. I'm like, okay, well, before I sign off on that, because in 20 years, your kids are going to come after me legally. Let's make sure, like, do you have an emergency fund? What if this happens? Like, that's what you were saying is like, oh, I didn't even think about those things, right? Like, right. What does my whole picture look like? And like, okay, maybe we don't invest that much aggressively, but if we have all of these other pieces, then we can invest that much aggressively. So really looking out for a client's best interest. Sometimes it's asking the questions that nobody wants to ask you. Like if you go in to, I'm not going to use names, but if you go into a building and you're like, okay, here's $100,000. I want it invested. Those people are going to say, okay. And they're going to take your money and they're going to invest it and they're not going to ask any questions. That's not a fiduciary. Fiduciary is like, okay, that's great. Now let's talk about why. Let's talk about the things. Let's explain. Let me, you know, see if there's a hole. Let me make you give you an education on different aspects of what could happen if A, B, or C happened. So it's kind of having that more deep conversation. Like I know like some clients will come in and they're preparing for their retirement. And then I have to ask the question like, what about your parents? You know, what's their plan? Do they have long-term care or what's their retirement plan? Is there a chance that they could be living with you? That's going to affect your retirement plan, right? So I have to ask certain questions that most people aren't going to ask. And that's kind of like in that fiduciary space, just making sure that your commitment to putting your clients first and being genuine, making sure they're educated. That's really what that's about.
And can you... If somebody comes to you and they say, listen, like I have a limited budget, do you give them options like, okay, this is A, B, C, like this price point, that price point, you know?
100%. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll work, like I was saying before, I'll work with somebody who has maybe $20 to put towards their retirement a day and then somebody else who has $20,000 to put per day, right? Like in the same day. And what I'm going to show them are very, very different. Goals can be the same, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
On a fire, but it's going to be like, what does your retirement look like in your head? Okay, let's see what we can do to get you there. At least get something started so that we know what the growth is, right? All yeah. While keeping you safe. So, yeah, definitely we work with whatever budget. Even this morning, for example, I had somebody I was chatting with and we were talking about long term care. She wants to invest. And I said, okay, well, you know, like you're young, but this is something that you can maybe open that idea. And this would be the recommended amount, you know, for where you are and like so that you have the right amount by the time you're at retirement age. And her face went, and I said, that looks like a no to me. That looks like that's going to be overwhelming to you. My job is not to make you stay awake at night. My job is to make sure that you feel better going to bed at night. Mm-hmm. So like we looked at that number and we adjusted it and we still put something in place that made her feel like, okay, I've got something started. But it's also a space where she's like, I don't have to give up, you know, my Starbucks tomorrow morning, right? Like, which is also valid, right? So I think that being able to say like, there are options inside of what your goals are is huge. And being honest about like how you're feeling about like what the budget is.
Yeah, because I think that that's like a huge barrier for people like to get past. Like they always think that they've got to have a minimum, you know, $100,000 or they don't even know. I mean, honestly, I had a friend ask me after one of our episodes that we had with an estate planner, like, how much money do you need to put in a trust? And I was like, oh, like, no, it's not as complicated as it makes it sound. Like, not that the estate planner made it sound like that, but people hear the word trust and automatically think, oh my God, I have to have hundreds of millions of dollars to get started. And you don't, you literally don't, you know?
But if you go to a financial advisor, there are financial advisors who won't work with you unless you have at least like $250,000 in assets.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not what I do. Why I'm a holistic financial strategist. Like some people are like, you're a financial advisor. I'm like, that gives me a dirty feeling. So yeah, and that's why I mentioned before, you know, like when I was growing up, I had a single mother. Our housing situation wasn't always stable. I mean, we lived in hotels here and there. I grew up very, very poor. Like we did not have money. And then I worked really hard. I had a business that grew from nothing and I think was very lucrative. Like I had a great business. Like it's like, come on, kid, don't be allergic, right? Like we finally made it. All right, fine. So then like I had that, you know, I have a husband who came from a lot of generational wealth. So I've seen all the sides of it. And I think for me, and I think it's different for everybody. For me, my purpose is to help whoever comes into my door, right? And some people are like, oh, I don't have enough money for a financial planner. And I'm like, maybe that's why you need one, right? So like yesterday I did a debt management plan with somebody and like, they're like, what? I can't pay. And no, you cannot pay me. Like my time to you is like, what you can do is send me people that you know, refer me. That would be the best payment, right? So like, again, back to that networking. That's for sure. Like where I hold myself as a purposeful, driven human being is, you know, if there's a groom that walks in my door and he's like, I got this family. I need to send money home to my parents. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm making this. Yes, I have housing and somebody provided me with a car, but like, I don't know what to do. And like, maybe that same business owner, right? Who has grooms. They're like, I don't want to lose my guy. So we put together plans and that will help them retain staff in the equestrian and in any world, in any business space, but it also transfers into the equestrian world.
Right.
Or like maybe that business owner's like, you know, I haven't done any retirement planning or any like disability or long-term care or any of that. Well, if we have your business do it, we can look at having them write it off. Yeah. So it's like also like kind of putting together the things that we are used to. And I think that like having the past in the equestrian world gives me a little bit of an advantage on having that conversation because I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't just do it for individuals. You can also help businesses.
Yeah. So I do individuals, families, businesses. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So like for businesses, it'll be like on that side of it, you know, for the owners or even inside of the business, we'll do like buy, sell agreements, exit strategies. We can even do plans for employees, like employee health situations and stuff like that. Some of the things that we offer, like some people are like, oh, well, especially in the equestrian world, they're like, oh, well, you know, staff comes and goes. Like we all know this. So I can't, you know, maybe I don't want to offer something for all of my staff. We have things that you can like be picky and choosy on who you offer what, which is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sometimes I feel like that's the reason why people move around so much is because
they don't get any benefits.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I stayed at Blue Chip for 12 years because they had great benefits for, you know, working on the farm for everybody, for any groom, you know, and that was important to me to have health insurance and be able to invest in a 401k, you know. So, yeah, sometimes I think that helps create loyalty.
It's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For sure.
Is there kind of a general advice that you would give to equestrians about planning for their future?
Advice to give to them? Yeah. Just do something, right? Like I think a lot of times people, like whether they're starting out or they already have it in place, if they're just starting out, talk to somebody. Like I'm sure you guys hopefully will give out my number. Feel free to call me anytime. or somebody in your area, whatever it is, having somebody to talk to just trying to get started is a huge part. Anything that you're going to do today, like it compounds, right? So like if you put $5 today, then it's going to, tomorrow it's going to be 15, right? Like it grows faster the earlier you start. So like a lot of people I'll say, like when they're young, especially, if you start when you're 20 or 18, you're going to be so much further ahead than if you start when you're 35. Or if you're 35 and you haven't started yet, let's get started. Because by the time you're 55, you're closer to what ideally you would like to retire. And I think that's where we see, especially in the sport, so many people working for such a long time, not necessarily because they want to, but because they need to. And I think that it would be more exciting to watch people want to work longer than opposed to like seeing the people at the ring. They're like, I don't want to be here. It's like, well, so I think that would be my advice is to like, wherever you are, talk to somebody, whether it's to get started or to have them take a look at whatever you already have in place to make sure that there are no holes and that you're looking at it from like a whole aspect of everything going down.
And what are some of the skills that you transfer between the equestrian world and your current role?
Yeah, definitely. So especially when it comes to planning and running a business, right? As a professional in the horse world, I think I had to really understand how the numbers worked, right? You have to manage cash flow. You've got to navigate seasonal income, right? You're showing, you're not showing wherever you are, handling payroll, right? It's just making smart decisions really around expenses. Or if you're not sure where that is, right? Like that's a huge part. I was able to become really familiar with like, you know, how to structure businesses for tax efficiency, which I think is really helpful. I think that on the planning side, that I was always looking ahead, right? I like Jen is laughing at me because I'm type A, I have lists and I definitely plan ahead. That's just my personality. So like, you know, on that side, when it was in the equestrian world, it was more like mapping out show calendars, budgeting for travel and training, right? Like investing in horses with intention, not just being like, oh, I like this one, let me buy it. And then let's see what pans out. You know, adjusting life, but then also being able to adjust as life happened, because we all know that horses break and people change and all the things happen, right? So having that mindset, that same mindset applies directly to the financial planning world. And in that space, you know, I'm really always looking at like where you are now, where do you want to go? What steps make the most sense? And that can change, right? Like you can have a hiccup tomorrow that wasn't there. And then we sit down again and we say, okay, like, where are we again? Like what are we going to do in order to get there now? Like how are we going to shift things around? So I think the ability to be both practical and strategic for me, like having that eye on risk and timing and return, that definitely started at the barn, but it carries through into what I do now.
And do you think that this is a job that you could do and stay in the horse industry? I'm not saying as a professional, but like if there was somebody young out there who was looking for a career and kind of had that same kind of mindset to do it, do you think that they could balance doing what you do now and having a horse and riding and competing?
Definitely. 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 I think the first 3 years are the most challenging. So I think that like the first 3 years, you have to really build your business in any space, right? Anybody that's starting a new business, the first 3 years are the hardest. Yeah. And I think that
insurance and real estate, I mean, all of it, really. Yeah.
So I think that like, if you're kind of committed to doing this, this is one of those careers that you definitely work less the longer you're in it. So those first 3 years are hard. You have to buckle down. You have to take the hits. You have to understand that you know, you're going to have ebbs and flows. So whether you can supplement it with another position, if you're young and looking to do that and stay riding for those first 3 years, then yes. After that, very much, very easy. Like your schedule is your own. You get to pick and choose when you want to do things. Like I travel a lot. I was in Dallas last week. Then I went and did a clinic up in Massachusetts the following week. Then I'm going to Miami next week. Like I travel at least 10 days a month. So I think that it's something that you can do remotely, which is amazing. I do almost all of my calls via Zoom. My older clients who are not necessarily technology, like they're not savvy with technology, I will make it a plan to meet with them in person. That's also a choice, right? So I think that you can kind of create whatever you like in this field, but it is a lot of learning. Every day you have to learn because like laws change every day. Tax laws change. right? Everything changes every day and you have to know what you're talking about. You can't make an assumption that because it was the case 5 years ago, that it's going to be the case today.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out is that whenever we talk, you're like, oh, I have to study for a test. I'm like, oh my gosh, still, you're still doing
that's kind of my norm is I put in probably anywhere from 1 to 2 hours a day, 5 days a week on just learning. And that can be learning for, you know, financial planning. It can be learning for specific things in retirement. It can be learning for something specific in estate planning. It can be learning something specific in like this week, it's been really focusing on some special needs planning for a client. And that's the other thing, you know, if a client comes across my desk, I can say, what's really nice is I work with a large team behind me. I partner with a company that's fantastic. And they have huge team of people. So at any point, if anybody comes and I'm like, I'm not quite sure, you know, for special needs planning, for example, I went to our advanced planning group and I'm like, here's what I need. They're like, great, here's George and Jeff. Awesome. And we sit down and we have a conversation. And so it's really great that I get to kind of like pluck experts from different fields. You know, we have estate attorneys on staff. So some people are like, I don't want to pay my lawyer to like go over this and, you know, hours and hours. I'm like, great, let's sit with our lawyers. We'll draft a plan. And then you go and have them actually, your lawyer just draft it. You don't have to sit with them and pay them by the hour. So like that's, it is helpful to have that.
Yeah. Sure. And when you were building your book of business, of clients, was it people you knew? Like, how did you get your initial clients?
Yeah, so that's funny. So everybody does it differently. I am not great at public speaking. So that's why when we first met, I'm like, this is not on camera or anything, right? I get very nervous. I have to public speak next week, which I'm petrified for. But yeah, so I do no cold calls. I personally just don't have that in me. I do all mine through referrals, networks, people that I know. I just have a conversation like, hey, okay, that's great. Would you sit with me? And like, let me just show you what I do. And most people need something. Most people don't want to talk. Some people are like, and I've had this in my town. I've had a few very close friends that I just kind of thought that they were going to like, you know, work with me. And they were like, I really do need this, but I don't want to share my personal private finances with my neighbor. And I'm like, I totally get that. So then I refer them to somebody else. Gotcha. So I think that that's really when it comes to how you're finding, you're building your book of business. It's for me, it's almost all referrals. I've had some, yeah, almost all referrals.
Wow. That's yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. It's great. Awesome. It's helpful.
Yeah. Well, it's been so fun talking to you and learning more about what you do and sharing it with our listeners. And at the end of each episode, we ask these same four questions to our guests. And Connor starts with the first.
What is your unfair advantage over others?
Probably that I grew up in a very difficult household where we were homeless sometimes. So I have that knowledge of what that feels like and being scared to like know what if you're going to have a roof over your head, that I built a business from scratch that was successful. So I know what that is. And then I also married into wealth. So I also know that space. So I think that for sure, having that range gives me an edge to be able to talk to anybody.
And what's something worth fighting for? And what is something worth giving up?
Something worth fighting for? Peace of mind. 100%. Whether it's your finances, your family, whatever you want for your future. So making sure you have peace in your head. And then what was something worth giving up? Probably the illusion that doing nothing's safer than making a plan, right? Making an illusion that you're going to be fine or just self-talking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's been your favorite age so far?
Honestly, probably right now. I feel pretty grounded. I'm really very clear on my purpose. Just finally giving myself permission to kind of just grow and be who I am without apologizing about it. I think that that's really great. Yeah.
Awesome.
And who would you recommend as a guest for this podcast?
Equestrian business. Have you had Anne? I was thinking about this. Anne. I think Anne. Yeah. Have you had her on?
No. We have talked to her and we just haven't been able to pick a day yet. So,
okay.
We would love to have Anne.
I would love to hear what the questions are. I would love to chime in and listen.
Yeah.
We'll just have you like sneak in at the end and ask your own questions.
I'll rapid fire deal.
Yeah.
Like, we have a surprise guest for your rapid fire, Anne.
Right.
Yeah. Miracle. This was amazing. Thank you so much for doing this and inviting me to join. I love this. This was spectacular.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was great to talk to Roseanne today and be able to share her story, because I think there are lots of people out there who are either forced or choose to give up a job in the equestrian world and have to figure out how to do something else, you know, when they've probably just done horses for their entire lives. And, and I think it's important to share stories of people who have successfully found something else to do that they love just as much.
Yeah, she seems very fulfilled by this job. Yeah. And it's great that she's been able to transition from the horse industry and also give people an idea of other things that they might be able to explore as careers.
Right.
You know,
yeah. And still be able to have horses in their lives. Like she said, yeah. You know, this is something once you get past the building years that you could easily work horses back into your life. And but, you know, with the flexibility that you can have with this type of job. But I love that, you know, she's been able to really make this so successful for herself, because I know how hard it was for her to leave a business that, you know, like she said, was her identity. And that was, it took her so much effort and sweat and tears to build, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how transparent she was about her story and being able to see both sides of it. And I've also had an opportunity to sit down with her and kind of go through my things on a professional level. And it was really informative and low pressure, and I enjoyed it. And I also liked, because we've talked about on the podcast before, some estate planning going on with one of my family members. And there's one of them that has some special needs. And I talked to her about that, and she was like, yeah, we can bring a team together. And she kind of mentioned that on the podcast as well, that she had worked with somebody. And that is comforting to me and very helpful to know that it's not going to be this one-off, go to this person, go to that person, this person. Like, we can go to her. She can kind of pull a team together, get all the information at one time, say this is doable or this isn't doable. We need to have option A, B, and C. Like, this is how much we can afford to spend to do it. And so having somebody that can advocate like that for you is really great. And I totally get where she was saying, you know, some people that are close to her might not want a close friend seeing like all their business. But I think it's good to have somebody like that she can refer you then to somebody else.
Oh, yeah. I love that she doesn't pressure you, but she's always there to be like, hey, so how you doing on this?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For people who are not type A, who always need that little push and that reminder, and to say like, okay, where do we stand on this? Like,
right.
You know, do you want to use this time? You know, okay, you didn't get this done. Like, do you want to use this time to talk with me and go over things? Or do you want to use this time to get done what you haven't done already?
Right.
So that's really cool. She does, as a fiduciary, is not sales-based. It's not commission-based.
Right.
So she's not continually pushing you to buy something because she's going to make money off of it.
Right.
So you know what she's doing is in your best interest.
Correct. Yeah.
And not because she's going to make money from it.
Right. Right. And she just wants to see people
have a plan, be successful, get where they want to go. And I like that a lot. It's mm-hmm. it's comforting to know that you can have somebody. And like I said, I love how she was like, do you have a CPA? Yes, I do. I was like, and a financial guy, and they're both horse people. And she was like, oh, I need their information. And I was like, okay, let me talk to them and get back to you. Make sure that they're on board with that. Because, you know, I was like, yeah, they're horse people and they enable me.
Yeah.
I was like, I surround myself with enablers. But yeah, I mean, like, I like how she's connecting and networking. And it's funny to me because I have had that conversation a couple of times with one of our friends about how do you make money off of like networking? Because like, I'm pretty good at it. She's pretty good at it. Like, obviously Roseanne's great at it. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm like, how do we monetize this? Well, she figured out a way to do it and it not be in, like she said, like a dirty way. Like it's, you mm-hmm. know, out of the goodness of her heart, kind of coming from a good place. And then, you know, can accomplish what she wants to in life. So,
right. Because some of it is business based, right? Like she's yeah. getting referrals, but then like she mentioned the swim teacher, like she just does yeah. that because yeah. she loves helping.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I do it all the time mm-hmm. and don't expect anything from it. I'm just hoping it comes back to me in karma.
Mm-hmm.
Doing good. Please refer me.
Right.
Oh, use my products so that my sales go up.
Yeah. Well, it was a great conversation. I'm glad yeah. we got to have it with her.
Yeah. And I totally hope that it helps somebody in the future. Somebody, I hope that they go to her, use her. I'm telling you, it'll be worth your time. Mm-hmm. And it's so super low pressure. And then also, you know, think about it. If you're stuck and don't know what to do, this might be an avenue of something that you can find. Because one thing I find about a lot of horse people is we all sort of have that compassion in us. And, you know, I think that that's what this job takes is to have mm-hmm. some compassion for people. So, mm-hmm. you know, might be, hey, hopefully we spark the idea for somebody.
For sure. And at least just get people, like she said, to make that first phone call or to take that first step to thinking about your future if you haven't already.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that a couple of episodes ago about, you know, like, sure, it's cheaper to do nothing, but in the long run, is it really worth it
right.
for you or your family? Probably yeah. not. Mm-hmm. Probably not. All right. We're going to wrap up today. And you can find the links to today's guest in the show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com. Equestrian B2B is out twice a month on the 1st and the 15th.
You can find out more at eqbusinesswomen.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review.
Now go start planning.